Okay, just to remind you, so everybody has their schedule straight, they will be doing the yearly financial audit next Saturday on the 1st, but into March, the 9th is the day the time changes, so we don't meet for first session. We will just meet for second session and have the annual meeting then and deal with that. Now, we'll have to announce that a couple of more times before we get. That's part of the bylaws. We have to do that. So at any rate, that's the 9th, and that's the only thing I know that we have on the schedule for now. All right, let's make sure we're in fellowship, and let's continue on here dealing with all the fun stuff that makes for either a good marriage or one that'll implode. We want to have successful Christian marriages that are a reflection of the relationship between Christ and the church, and that glorify God, holding to the biblical mandates that we have, the biblical parameters for what constitutes marriage and all that. So we've closed here, I think, with point 18. One part of sacrifice entails the husband providing physically. So the husband is to be the primary breadwinner. That doesn't mean that his wife can't help. It doesn't mean she has to, though, either. So these things have to be worked out on an individual basis between couples, but we have to keep the general framework of what's important. Attendance in Bible class, keeping our marriage straight, keeping our home straight, and then the job comes really like third down the list of your priorities, but it's got to be there. So 19, while many men have expressed the wrong-headed idea that this alone, I take care of you, don't I? What does that mean? That's an expression of how much I love you. Well, at some level it can be. But I've also seen, and I've been guilty of it, so I do know it happens, been guilty of, I pay for everything, what's the matter? Do you lack for anything? And, you know, but the second you get out of fellowship and you start focusing on you, you're probably going to take it out on the people around you. That's normally the ones that get it. And the ones you love the most, those are the ones you'll abuse the most. So that's always nice to know. So what we have to look forward to. I'm getting so depressed now, I want to go home. No, I'm kidding. But we have these responsibilities, and again, in many cases, this is not spelled out. I recognize that I like the way the left keeps putting it. Well, for so long, you know, men were in charge. Well, now that we've had 70 years of female rule kind of out there, how's that going for us? Going back to, say, the 60s and early 70s. Well, they've expressed the wrong-headed idea, some, that this alone fulfills his responsibility for putting his wife and her needs first. But finance is only one part of the total marital relationship. 20, a woman's needs are certainly more than financial in nature. Although that area does need to be handled properly. I do not want to minimize the importance of finances in a marriage, because fully 50% of people who are divorced say, or maybe it was 30%, I can't remember the number, but the people who got divorced, I think it was like half of them said money was the big issue. And so this has to be handled. But again, the Bible speaks more to money and our relationship to it than it does to salvation. So this is obviously quite critical to the human experience. So a wife's needs also include the spiritual, mental, physical, and very importantly, emotional needs. Men aren't good at this. We're not wired that way. And so this is why, well, again, apart from the biblical mandates, most men just blow this off. Because we say, well, I'm just not good at the tender stuff, the emotional stuff. No man is that I've ever met. You know, there may be some that are better than others, but there's most of us are weaker in that area, say, than our wives. Women tend to be the more emotional of the creatures. And that's, the difference is great. What God, can you imagine a world if they were all men? Or even worse, a world of all women. No, they're both be equally bad. There's no better or worse there, I don't think. So the most important need the wife has is spiritual. The adjusted husband should have a desire for spiritual growth and is responsible to make certain that his Christian wife has the ability to grow spiritually as a part of a local body of Christ. Because spiritual growth doesn't happen apart from that, or very minimally. People may say, well, I can make some progress without being a part of a local church. But how many applications can't you make when you're not in a local church? A whole bunch of them can't be made. So 22, if the husband is oriented to this principle, it means he will love his wife by setting a good example in attendance and application. He will not engage in or allow those things that conflict with the family priority of consistently growing in grace and knowledge. And 23, each husband is to be willing to support his wife's desire for spiritual growth and her desire to please the Lord. He should pray for her spiritual excellence, since it will actually reflect on him. Proverbs chapter 12. Proverbs 12:4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband. That means she adorns him. But she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones. So there's two extremes here, obviously. The excellent wife and then the shameful wife. And most women are probably going to fall somewhere in between. But we want to strive for excellence. And I can't remember, I didn't look this particular one up to see if that's the same term that's used in Proverbs 31. I'm not going to check that out right now. But I do know that Proverbs 31 talks about an excellent wife. And matter of fact, if you were watching the, if you saw that show, some of the show The Chosen, they were quoting Proverbs 31 pretty frequently in that show. Only I believe that instead of an excellent wife, they didn't quote the New American Standard. I think it was a woman of valor or virtue, I believe, was what they said. I can't remember exactly how they put it. But they recognized this is the kinds of things they talked about and had before them. So 24, not only is the husband responsible to provide for his wife's physical and spiritual needs, he is likewise to consider her mental and emotional needs. 25, many men, most of them, have a tendency to be terse and abrupt. A lot of men are not very forthcoming. I mean, that's just the nature of the male. Not that there aren't men that are more outgoing than other men. There are, you know, some of that's personality. I get that. We have different personalities. Again, the personalities that may drive you crazy, what would the life world be like if everybody was like you? I don't know if anybody ever saw that movie, Being John Malkovich, but it showed what the world would be like if it was all about you. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not a great movie, but I know that he got inside his own head and everything was Malkovich. You know, everyone was Malkovich. It was all about him. So it was kind of funny, but I also thought it showed where selfishness and self-centeredness leads. That's a part of that. Well, many men have a tendency to be terse and abrupt, to treat their wives in ways that do not reflect their actual love. Speaking to one's wife in curt, sharp, disrespectful, or condescending ways does not honor her mind or her emotions. And so I don't ever speak in condescending ways. I just do this. I just roll my eyes. No. But obviously I'm making a point here. That's to be avoided too. Body language. You know, that's the kinds of things that you can do when you're upset and things you can say. So, again, we have to watch this. And this is designed to put us all on notice. By the way, I get as much rebuke out of this as every other man, maybe more. And I still have to get up here and teach this. But that's the thing. As a pastor, you've got to get up and teach passages that go against you. Now, they may be beating you to death in the pulpit, but you just got to get up and teach them, and you can't skip them. I had one pastor tell me that. I won't teach anything I'm guilty of. What? There's a whole lot of the Bible you ain't teaching. I won't teach anything I'm guilty of? No, this is a part. And of course, don't you think that as the pastor, God's putting that pressure on the pastor to adjust his lifestyle to, hey, maybe you shouldn't be guilty of this. Maybe you should be able to teach it with a clear conscience by cleaning up your act. So we all have things. Again, we all have areas to grow. We're all works in progress. Nobody here's got it all together. If you think you do, let me come by and spend an hour with you, and we'll see. anybody could be on their best behavior for an hour. We wouldn't do that. I'll just plant a camera in your house. No, I'm kidding. Not going to do any of that. That always bothered me that, you know, if people got two noses and wanted to know too much about the home life, I don't want you knowing everything that goes on in my life. And some things you're ashamed of. You're embarrassed about. You fail. Acted like an idiot. Then you have to go back and humble yourself, right? That's always fun. I'm sorry. You'd be like the Fonzie. You can't get it out, though. I'm sorry. You can't say sorry. That was Fonzie's deal, if you remember that. So, again, we should watch how we talk. And because sometimes men are in a hurry or they've got a lot on their mind and all that, we don't stop and think about how we're talking sometimes. Sometimes I will hear it and I will think, that was not right. Sorry, I snapped at you. And other times I don't hear it, but I've gotten to where I hear it more, unfortunately. Well, men may not recognize it, but expressing oneself in abrasive, contemptuous, patronizing ways, not only reflects bad manners, it fails the mandate for believers to speak to one's wife with a view to edification and ministering grace to her. But sometimes I don't know about you, but I don't personally, when I come to Bible class, you know, everybody's here, you got different believers, and, you know, we're all dressed pretty nice and on our good behavior and not doing any bad thing. But when you're at home, go in the front door, kick off your shoes. If you're Peter Griffin, kick off your pants, grab your beer, sit on the sofa, and be the king. Well, I like that. Unfortunately, that's not real life. As a matter of fact, what you're talking about, they were mentioned on break there. I have this, and it's an old group, they're not even around anymore, called Cactus. They go back to the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. And there's a song on there called Whatever You Feel Like. And one of the lines, which I always thought was just hilarious when I listened to it, he said, we'll do whatever you feel like. Now go ahead and listen. And I thought, that's a lot of men, isn't it? We'll do what you want. Now shut up. And I thought, did nobody get the irony when he says this? Go ahead and listen. So here, Ephesians 4:29, this is the passage. And this is a general passage. I mean, this was not directed strictly to husbands and wives. It's a general passage, but has to be applied in the home. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. I know none of us have done this. None of us have ever gotten mad and smarted off or cussed or, given a blue streak for 5 minutes. We don't do this. Not at home anyway. Or at least not out in public, hopefully. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. But only such a word that is good for the edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. And we got to remember that we got to do this at home. This has to be worked out in our homes too, among the husband and the wife both. So 27, in that regard, there is a real need for the husband to show genuine appreciation for his wife. A man should be willing to exhibit kindness. Again, not men's strong suit. Most men, this does not come easy for us. Providing compliments. What? And encouragement as is appropriate. I mean, I will from time to time. I'm working on all of this. I'm aware of my shortcomings. But I try to, used to, I remember, but the Snyders are an odd bunch first. I want to let you know that if you ever meet my family, well, it'd be an adventure for you. Let's just put it that way. But it'd be a real adventure for you. The men on that side of the family, my dad was really, really quiet, but all the rest of the men, mostly, and he was too, were pretty blunt. And my brothers are all pretty blunt. If you meet my brother Daryl, I got two brothers, one named Daryl and another one named Daryl. No, I don't, but my brother Daryl, he's very blunt. He's even more blunt than I am sometimes, I think. He was the baby of the family, though, so he got kind of got his way a little more, maybe, than some of the rest of us did. But if something was put on the table, it wasn't, you know, I'd go in and look at it. What's this? That's not good. That's not the way to approach it. And so try to be complimentary towards the food. Or if you can't say anything good about it, just don't say anything. That's part of just sometimes keeping your mouth shut. But if it's good, compliment her on it. Say, hey, this is good. And that's just something simple like food, dinner. I mean, generally the women do more of the cooking than men. But, sometimes not as much. So this does not rule out, however, showing appreciation in a physical way. Some men are fond of greeting cards. That's what I mean by cards, not playing cards. They like to get a card expressing how much you love them. Like on Valentine's Day, you're in love. And for men, mostly the three times a year I have to deal with it is, birthday, anniversary, and Valentine's Day. I don't get her card for like Labor Day or anything. I don't feel that's necessary. People like cards. Some like candy, flowers, dining out, other romantic expressions. So these may be ways in which a believing husband can express his love for his wife, a tangible physical way she can see and that she's aware of and that she knows, hey, okay, yeah, he really cares about me. Well, 29, while male stereotypes, I'm macho man. And you stand like this and say it as you go into the house. I'm macho man. I'm here. And you think you're Superman. May suggest that such behavior demonstrates weakness. The fact is that it demonstrates a humble willingness to put her needs first. And in this way, the husband reflects the attitude and service of Christ. This is what we're trying to live out. But we have a very high standard, men. The highest of standards. We have a standard here, Mark 10:45. We have a standard of perfection. Now, obviously, we're never going to meet that in this life. But this is another reason for the verse-by-verse approach. If you don't take the time to stop and unpack all this and deal with what it actually means to love your wife or what it means to submit to your husband, well, again, you can read these passages just real quick. Mark 10:45, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. This is the nature of human selfishness. We want to be served. We don't want to have to sacrifice. We want it done for us. That's what selfishness is. It's all about me. And so Jesus said, no, I didn't come in that way. So 30, many people have problems with impatience, but not husbands. No, I'm kidding. And husbands are often no exception. The first way to deal with this is to seek to eliminate unreasonable expectations that one may have. And sometime back, it's probably been 15 or 20 years now back, I started thinking about this. And I started thinking about unrealistic expectations. What do people expect? And oftentimes what they expect isn't reasonable. It isn't realistic. I expect my wife to be perfect. Well, good luck on that one. See how that works out for you. Or my kids to be always obedient. I don't ever want to find them doing anything wrong. Well, let's see how that works. Again, I don't think it's going to work that way, but that's the nature of the deal. The first way to do is look at what is it I'm thinking. Do I expect my wife to be perfect? Do I expect her not to make any mistakes? Do I expect her to always be in a good mood because I might not be? And she better be. Well, that's not very realistic. And really, would you want to be treated that way? I wouldn't. And of course, that's one of the things in the marriage, the golden rule shines as brightly as anywhere else. Do to your wife what you want done to you. And the same way, on the reverse, wives should treat their husbands the way they would want to be treated. So 31, every believer should recognize that he is a work of grace in progress. In that regard, while one may expect growth and improvement in his wife, he should allow her time and space to grow spiritually. Don't expect her to have all the answers. If she comes to you and asks a question about the Bible, try to avoid, well, that's dumb. You don't know that? Try to avoid anything on, you know, on that order, rather than just answering the question. And that's a challenge, because sometimes some of us are a little more smart mouth than others. We know who we are. And so you want to try to minimize all that and work through it. But she's not going to be perfect. She's going to need to grow. She's going to have questions. She isn't going to know how to do everything you know how to do. But then there's probably things she knows you don't know, I would imagine. So the goal, point 32, is to manage one's expectations. Maintain open and honest communications. And attempt to find realistic ways to improve one's marriage. This will result in greater satisfaction for both. But here's where the people balk at some level. Because now it's becoming work. Now it's a challenge. Now I've got to sacrifice. I didn't sign up for this. I thought we were going to live happily ever after and you would do everything I wanted. Well, that wasn't very realistic. And of course, the women are all raised up with the Prince Charming, happily ever after fairy tales. And yet, it's more like Beauty and the Beast rather than Cinderella. But again, this is how people are raised, and they have these expectations, and some of them really aren't realistic. And we have to think through some of those things. So again, this will result in greater satisfaction for both partners, since both partners are necessary for a healthy relationship. And 33, men also have a natural tendency not to want to show weakness. You never notice this in men. And many times, of course, we had the whole thing that we were raised on, too. I mean, particularly the baby boomers, and maybe not so much down the road. But, I mean, we were all raised on John Wayne, rather, not Rock Hudson. John Wayne and Clint Eastwood, yeah. Dirty Harry, Charles Bronson. Yeah, that's what a man is. And so we came up with this idea that men are supposed to be tough. They're not supposed to show weakness. Men can't cry. And yet, if you don't have a cry from time to time, you're going to snap, unfortunately. But obviously, men don't cry as much as women. I get that. And that's another thing when you get into disagreements and all of that. Women can't resort to turning on the tears to get their ways. Little girls learn this early on. I found that out the hard way. Then they get to be big girls. But again, a wife may snap and cry and not be trying to manipulate. I understand that as well. I'm not saying it's always manipulative. But some people know how to get what they want with their tears. And that's not the way to do it. So both partners are necessary. So men have a natural tendency not to want to show weakness physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. And just to give you an idea, we record the Jeopardy show and we'll play it. And I'll tell her right before we start, okay, you ready? I'm about ready to beat you here. Let's go. It's time for your daily beating at Jeopardy. And unfortunately, sometimes she knows more than I do. What? I don't like that. And I find myself, I've found myself laying there on the sofa as we watch the TV show and she'd shout out the answer first. I found myself thinking, I didn't like it. I just had to fight the tendency to want to say, oh, you're so smart. So, but that was, that's, you want to be a good loser, but you want to be a good winner too. Sportsmanship and all that. Well, again, they don't want to do it. So in that regard, they often are not open and forthcoming with their wives about their own weaknesses or burdens. We think we have to bear the weight of the world on our shoulders. It's not just for us. Sometimes you have to share this burden. Sometimes you don't have to. Sometimes it's time for the man to step up and be a man and to support his wife and to take the burdens that are necessary there to alleviate her of things that she shouldn't have to do. Each husband has to work that out. Again, this has to be worked out in the household. We can give you the broad strokes, I think, and that's what this does, I believe. And even some good individual pointers as to things we can do. So when Peter uses a comparative adjective to indicate that the woman is the weaker vessel, it indicates that by comparison, the man himself is a weak vessel. 1 Peter chapter 3, this is the matter of the comparative there. Well, they deal with this. You husbands, again, husbands is a category in the same way. And what is this word here? Homoios. This adverb, likewise, or in the same way, similarly. Why is it here? Because Peter has been discussing orientation to authority from back in chapter 2, and that hadn't changed. He starts with orientation to the establishment chain of command, the government, the powers that be, the king, and all those who are in authority. Then he moves to slaves and masters. Likewise, you slaves, submit to your masters. Or I think it actually says obey in slaves. They have to obey. Then you look up here in chapter 3, verse 1. In the same way, homoios again. You wives, be submissive to your own husbands. So he's still talking about the matter of authority and submission in verse 7. You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives. This is how the husband submits to his wife. He figures out how to live with her properly. That's his submission, is to figure out what her needs are, to meet those needs, and live with your wives in an understanding way. He doesn't say submit to them. He doesn't say obey them. He doesn't use any of the language of that for husbands. But what he's talking about still is this matter of the mutual submission that must occur within a marriage. That there's times when you're right and your wife's wrong. Most of the time, of course. I'm kidding. But there's times when she's right and you're wrong. And both you both have to be humble. You both have to be willing to admit you're wrong. Or you can dig in your heels and see how that works for you. That does not work very well in a marriage at all. So live with your wives in an understanding way. I don't know why they keep wanting to change this. As with someone weaker, it's a weaker vessel, and the word vessel refers to her physical body. She's physically weaker than you. That's all it means. It doesn't mean she's emotionally, spiritually, or any other way weak. And there are some women, I mean, this isn't even true. I've seen some women, they can whoop their husband's butt. They're stronger than their husband. Don't want to marry one of them, but, you know. But so there's exceptions to this, I get it. But as a general rule, women are physically weaker than men. We shouldn't have to teach this. This should be self-evident in the world out there, in nature, that it's true. So he uses a comparative adjective. So if she's a weaker vessel there, what are you? A weak vessel. That's the thing. We're weak too. We have our own weaknesses. But again, that goes against sort of the male patriarchal thing we've been taught. You've got to be the man. You've got to not show emotion. You've got to have it all together. You've got to be able to handle everything. And all of the things that men have been taught. Some of this we're trying to have to undo with things. And then also with the women who've been taught, oh, you should tell your husband what to do. You should run him. You shouldn't listen to him. You're just as smart as him. You got it all together. We have to undo some of that too, because there's issues on both sides. So at 35, the husband has to learn to share openly and honestly. It doesn't mean you got to do this every day. But if you're really burdened about something, rather than go around and be in a bad mood, maybe it's time to get it off your chest. Maybe, you know, or you're struggling with a particular weakness. I still hate it. I'm 70 years old and I still hate to admit my weaknesses. But unfortunately, you got to deal with them if you're going to be any kind of successful at this. So the husband has to learn to share openly and honestly with his wife. He cannot allow his pride, spiritual or otherwise, to keep him from being open about his own personal areas of weakness. and areas in which he might struggle. Well, as a general rule, I think I can safely say, you don't have to be too much to share about your areas of weakness. She's aware of those. She's got those figured out. And she may have more of them than you do. But she may be aware of more than you. James chapter 5, again, this is in a context of a general principle that is actually for the local church at large, not just for husbands and wives. But James 5:16. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. The effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish a lot. And you pray for your wife if you know about her area, rather than get mad, okay, I need to pray. But what's our first thought a lot of times as believers? Something happens, somebody does something we don't like, and the first thought isn't, oh, I should pray for them. It's, I should tell them, stop it, or whatever it is they're doing. But no, we should pray. Recognize that your wife needs prayer, your husband needs prayer. We all need prayer. You can share your needs. We've all got email and text. You can send out a request anytime, anywhere, any place to people at class to pray about certain things and to intercede on behalf of them for God, with God, rather. Well, 36, there are certainly demonic and cosmic forces at work against all believers in the angelic conflict. Isolation is more likely to lead to defeat, while sharing and teamwork give a couple a greater chance of success. Again, another general principle that can be applied here, Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes 4:12. And again, an axiomatic statement here. If one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A team makes better sense. And a cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. And so the idea here is that we have to manifest teamwork in the fact that we're fighting an angelic conflict. We've got the cosmos, which is set against us, their mindset. And we'll find out more and more about their mindset as we watch them try to dismantle some of the fraud, waste, and bureaucracy in our government. Everybody was all excited about this until it starts happening. And this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. A politician that actually got up and did what they said they would do. I have never seen that before. They did all this, by the way, if you go back and look for all the Democratic, if you hear all the carping and moaning from the liberal left about all of this. I saw a deal of Clinton and Gore, and they were saying the very same things 15, 20 years ago, however long it was, that Trump is saying. And the Democrats all thought that was good. Well, we're going to cut government. But they never did it. They just wouldn't drain the swamp. They wouldn't get rid of all of this stuff. Again, there's going to be a honeymoon period, and that's probably quickly coming to an end. But I got to say, in 30 days, I've never seen a politician actually begin to do what he promised. I've just never seen that. It's always down the road they're going to fix it. Well, we don't know. Ecclesiastes 4:12 there. So, again, in the angelic conflict, and when you're dealing with demonic attacks, if we're not unified, I mean, we see this in the local church, but even within our homes, demonic attacks are going to be much more difficult to fend off if you're splintered and divided in your home. You're fighting it by yourself. We are to fight this as a team in our marriages. On the other hand, point 37, the husband is not to dump every problem at the feet of his wife and expect her to be able to deal with the pressures that he himself cannot fully handle. Men have to be wise about this. You have to think about it. Is this something I need to share with my wife? Is this something that would help her understand me and put some insight into what's going on here? Or am I just trying to unload on her? And you've seen this probably hundreds of times in movies and TV shows and stuff. Somebody does something wrong, they make a mistake, and then they want to go unburden themselves at the other person's expense. What you have to ask yourself, is it going to help this person if I tell them what I did? Or assuming you've done something wrong. Everything can't be dumped on your wife, nor is everything expected to be dumped on her. But if you can't handle certain things, ask yourself, would this help her? Will this edify her? Is this going to drag her down? This is why church leaders, in many cases, have to limit the ability, you know, the information they share with their wives. Because you don't want to have some problem you're dealing with on the church board, and then you tell it to your wife, and she goes to class and has a bad attitude towards the person that's giving you trouble. You don't want that. She doesn't need that. So, and we don't typically tend to have a whole lot of problems, so I understand that. Not to say we can't, but as a rule, there should be a balance. That's point 38. There should be a balance between keeping one's wife informed, being genuinely forthcoming, and overloading one's wife with burdens that she should not have to bear. Your wife is your helper, not your therapist. So not to say that she can't give you advice or that you can't benefit from that. You can. Maybe sometimes, and you know this probably as well as I do, that at times people don't necessarily need advice. They just need somebody to listen to them. That's all they need is somebody. And sometimes if a person will talk through something, I've had it happen. I'll go into something, I'm upset about it, it's on my mind. I start talking about it and I realize, I'm not as upset about that as I was. Sometimes it's good just to get it off your chest. Again, there's a difference between just talking, having a conversation, and trying to deal with an issue, and gossiping or slandering or maligning. Those are obviously different issues. So in that regard, those in positions of spiritual authority, pastors and deacons, must be very careful with how much they share with their weaker vessel. Some information is not edifying. There are certain things you just don't need to share because it wouldn't accomplish anything. All it would do is burden your wife. You don't want that. And may put unnecessary pressure on the wife that she simply does not need. So if one is to communicate effectively with his wife, he must overcome the general male tendency to internalize issues, problems, and struggles. A man should be willing to provide an honest answer when asked, "How was your day?" You've opened the can of worms now. We're going to war. Why? Because I asked how your day was. That seems to be an overreaction a bit, don't you think? Yeah. So rather than think, why is she asking me this? That's a stupid, or maybe you say it, that's a stupid question. Or that's none of your business. The husband should give a humble and honest answer when asked the question. Oh, by the way, as should wives. Both fail at this, I know. And have you ever played this game in your marriage? What's wrong? Nothing. I know something's wrong. No, there's not. And or have you been on the other end of that? They ask you, what's something bothering you? No. No, nothing's wrong. And yet you both know that there's something up. You can sense it. And obviously we have to be careful of that. Because sometimes I will think something's wrong and there really isn't. But 9 times out of 10, I'm usually pretty right when I think something's up. And it can be anything. It could be nothing. You know, she may just be struggling. I'm having a hard time because of blah, blah, blah. Doesn't have anything to do with you. Okay. Well, that's when you say that honestly. And then your spouse isn't sitting there thinking, all right, they're mad at me. Now, why won't they tell me? And then you get mad. What's wrong with them? And then there you go. And wham, then you will have a world war. So, again, we have to be careful of, and I say rather than think, and you might even say, why are you asking me? Men can vocalize these things as well. But we should avoid these kinds of knee-jerk responses. They're called jerk responses, I think, for a reason. 42, men may be very guilty of clamming up. Of course, this is the John Wayne approach. I don't talk, pilgrim. Or simply refuse to speak when they get upset and do not want to discuss something. And there may be a good deal for that. Now, and sometimes you may need to not say anything to where you can get yourself together and not just say something stupid or start a big fight. You may say, okay, give me some time here. Now, obviously, you should not take days to get something out. It should be dealt with, you know, somewhat expeditiously. Well, if you're dealing with something that's difficult. and wearing on you. So when a married couple fights, does that happen? Oh, yeah. And the husband, wives can do this as well, chooses to take a vow of silence. This behavior works strongly against fulfilling the imperative with regard to resolving conflicts in an expeditious fashion. Ephesians 4:26. We saw a whole lot of this. Again, Ephesians was a little more expanded than Colossians, but Colossians, Paul was dealing more with a particular issue there, where I think Ephesians was just a general, more overall general letter, but they were dealing with the Colossian heresy. Ephesians 4:26, be angry, and yet do not sin. So, again, there's a form, there's righteous indignation, where you see injustice, these kinds of things, and it upsets you. It should. We should be upset by injustice and all of these things, when people are done wrong. But don't assume it's just injustice because you see it. One of the things that our media has gotten very good at doing, and that is whitewashing the real problem. They did this, and this goes way back. I mean, if you remember the guy who was out there, Rodney King, out there in California, when they showed the deal of the cops beating him. Well, this looks god-awful. But see, what went on the hour before that, when he led them on a wild chase and was evading and was violent and all of that? What happened to George Floyd? Why was he there in the first place anyway? He was a known felon. These people aren't innocent that just accidentally run into the police and get killed in many cases. But they only show you the part they want to show you. And that's not fair. And it's not right. It's just designed to put the police in a bad light. And then, of course, this, here we come, defund the police. Oh, that makes good sense. All we need to do is just have a world with anarchy. It's getting that way anyway, by the way. There's things that can make you angry. Okay. But we can't let that anger deteriorate into sinful anger, where we start violating principles of the truth because we're angry about something. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. This means get it resolved, particularly before you go to bed. Now, can I tell you, after 49 years of marriage, we've done that every night? No. Have we ever gone to bed mad? Linda has. I never did. No. Kidding. Yes, we both have. We failed at this. But it doesn't help. Does it resolve itself overnight while you're asleep, by the way? Or you get up in the morning, you're still upset. That's what happens. You just drag the fight into the next day. And that may go on. You may have a fight that you fight 2 or 3 days. God help you if you do. But they can happen. And both people dig in their heels. They're not willing to compromise. They're not willing to bend. That's a recipe for conflict, no doubt. But don't let the sun go down on your anger. So 44 on the other end of the spectrum. The husband must likewise be willing to pay attention and listen. What? Listen to his wife. He must be willing to hear her out rather than being quick to interrupt her and provide advice. But husbands tend to think they're there to fix it. So the wife comes in and says, okay, I've got this problem, and she starts venting. Maybe she just wanting to talk. Maybe she doesn't even want your advice. Maybe she just needs to get something off her chest, and she'll be fine. Sometimes when you talk about things out loud, you work through them mentally in some ways when you're doing that. Rather than being quick to interrupt her and provide advice, husbands must recognize their limitations in that regard. One's wife may want to share something and may not be looking for advice or for her husband to fix the problem. And I've seen, this was a regular feature on sitcoms. The wife would have a problem. The husband would go to fix it. They'd get into a fight because she told him, I don't need you to fix all my problems. And she's frustrated and he's frustrated. And there you go. I've seen this used as a foil on these sitcoms. She may simply have the need to vent. Sometimes that's people do. They just need to talk. Sometimes they just need an ear. They don't necessarily need you to work everything out for them. She may simply have the need to vent, since articulating one's feelings can sometimes allow a person to put things into the proper perspective. Why do you think they have therapy? It's to get the person to talk and to articulate these things so they can see them themselves, rather than keep them internalized sort of in the dark, as it were. So here, the husband should be discerning enough to recognize that when his wife is simply recounting or explaining something to him, and when she is actually grumbling or complaining under the old sin nature, there's a difference. You may be talking about something, but you may not be mentally upset about it. But it's something you need to get out. And not everything needs to be vented. Some people say, well, I vent all the time and I feel better. Well, how about your spouse? Do they feel better after you vent all the time? Maybe not. But there's a place for it, I understand. But again, all these things are just little tools in the toolbox that we can use. Talking, praying for one another, sharing, trying not to be condescending, and all of that. That's why we want to avoid all that. Listening carefully, point 47, instead of mentally planning your next word or move. How many times as a husband have you sat there and been doing that? Or wives can do this too. You know, they'll come and talk to you, and you're I got this worked out already. So did you hear what I said? I'm busy working out your problem in my head. But sometimes you just got to stay focused and listen. And not be there. You're not there. Be nice. I know sometimes as men, we feel like we've got to fix everything. And we want to sometimes. And there's nothing wrong with that, but just recognize it's not realistic. And that's not why God has called us to fix everything. Fix what we can. So listening carefully instead of planning your next word or move demonstrates to the wife that her husband is empathetic. He really cares, which is a critical factor if one is to have a healthy relationship. And in that regard, healthy relationships are those in which each person has a voice. Thus, disagreements will arise, unless one or both are brain dead. If one of you is brain dead, okay, you might not fight. So that's okay. But this is a critical factor if one is to have a healthy relationship. And conflicts here must be handled with the same sacrificial love. You're going to have conflicts. They're going to arise. Just as Jesus said, stumbling blocks are going to be there. They're going to be there. You can't get around them. You're going to have conflict. It's learning how to work through all these and resolve our conflicts in a biblical fashion that is healthy for us and healthy for our marriages. So as mentioned, point 49 previously, one aspect of love for one's wife is the matter of finances. The husband is generally to be the provider, but must obviously have the cooperation of his wife. If the family is to be healthy financially. And by the way, unhealthy finances are going to be a pressure on your marriage all the time, and it will destroy him eventually if given enough time, I believe. Many people cannot get past that. And again, when you find out that half of the divorces have been over money. And this gets into a bunch of interesting issues. Matter of fact, I was watching a show yesterday. It was one of the old Big Bang Theories. They had a rerun on. And they come to Howard's. And if you know who Howard is, he's a little Jewish guy there. Come to him and tell him, oh, but guess what? Bernadette wants a prenup. Prenup. Nothing screams love to me like a prenup. Nothing screams partnership and cooperation like a prenup. Doesn't a prenup scream, I don't trust you? Doesn't a prenup scream, it's all mine? What kind of marriage is that going to be? When the husband or the wife, it could go either way. I mean, husbands can ask for prenup, so can wives. And why? If you're that worried about protecting yourself from that person, should you be marrying them? Should you be marrying them if you're that worried about what they're going to do? Or what's more important to you, them or your money? That becomes an issue in life. Because some people, their money is the most important thing to them. They work their marriage around their finances rather than the other way around, working the finances around your marriage. So here, the husband is generally to be the provider, but again, must have the cooperation of the wife. You have to have a budget. One sure way to guarantee failure in marriage is to go into it financially unprepared. And the pressures and things that come on you in life, and as a general rule anyway, are going to be made worse. Simply because the husband, point 50, may provide the majority of the family's financial needs. Although exceptions exist, he generally should. But That does not mean that the finances are to be divided in a marriage by the percentage that each contributes. When you start trying to keep score with money, you're headed down the wrong path. That's not a partnership. That is, everybody's in it for themselves. And that's not what marriage is supposed to be about. All right, well, we're going to stop there today. I'm whooped. And you can only take so much of this, and I can only take so much of it. So I won't tell you what all I'm guilty of, but some of it, maybe. I'm not sure. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of your word. We pray that you would sanctify these principles to our Christian lives and our marriages so that we may reflect the glory that was to exist and is to exist between Christ and the church. For we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.